pursuing the theme, Some Issues Before Us, for several weeks now. And today I'm changing my subject, but still under the same theme, to how children grow or who will teach them. My text is the second chapter of the Gospel of Luke on page 890, if you'd like to follow me along. And I will be reading just two verses, verses 51 and 52. Jesus is now 5 years old, and he has been to the temple at one of the great religious festivals. He stayed behind, creating anxiety for his parents. Now he is going home. Verse 51. He went down and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. And his mother kept all these things in her heart. And then the text of the day. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. Let us pray silently for a moment. You know, there is no end to the advice that you can get about how to raise children, particularly from those who have no children. One bit of wisdom that has always appealed to me came from John Wilmot, the Earl of Rochester, who, speaking in the 17th century, said, and I quote, "Before I got married, I had six theories about bringing up children. Now I have six children and no theories." In Luke chapter 2, a lot of territory is covered in a very short span, with clarity and with an economy of words. In one chapter, we move from the dramatic moment of the birth of Jesus Christ to the brink of his teenage years here at the end of the chapter. Then the life of Jesus from age 12 to age 30 is summed up, all 18 years of it, in one sentence. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. I like the way some of the newer translations captures that verse. The Living Bible, for example, says, "So Jesus grew both tall and wise and was loved by God and man." My favorite, though, comes from Clarence Jordan's Cotton Patch version of the Gospel of Luke. He says, "And Jesus forged ahead, both mentally and physically. And God liked him, and people liked him too." Our first reaction to the text is that's what I'm looking for my child. That's the ideal that I pray for and hope for and work for, that my child and children will be physically fit, mentally alert, socially well-rounded, and spiritually strong. And as you grow older, so much of your happiness on a personal basis is invested in what happens to your children and to your grandchildren, who they are and what they become. What we see in our text, which describes how Jesus grew, is the ideal that we hope for. I have always liked what Carl Jung said about his own upbringing as he reflected upon it later in life. He said, for example, that from the beginning I had a sense of destiny, as though my life was assigned to me by fate and had to be fulfilled. This gave me an inner security, and though I could never prove it to myself, it proved itself to me. I did not have this certainty. It had me. And that's ideally something of what we want our children to have. A sense of certainty and inner serenity, along with a self-worth that makes them think good things about who they are and what they are about. But you do not journey long or far along the road of life, because before you leave the ideal that you hope for and pray for and are confronted by reality, the real. Someone said to me recently, I thought it was a strange observation, "Preacher, there's a real world out there," as if I did not know. And the real world for our children and for their children is going to be and is far more challenging, far more dangerous, far more diverse than any world that I faced as a child. Children today are called upon routinely to deal with reality and face things that I not only did not have to deal with, I did not even know about. To give you a flavor of what they are facing, let me give you just some of the signs of the time as they impact children. For example, the next time you go into your favorite bookstore, look in the section on family and self-help, and you will see books that are talking about the world in which children are being raised. For example, the book Raising PG Kids in an X-Rated Society by Tipper Gore is worth reading. Raising Positive Kids in a Negative World by Zig Ziglar. Kids Who Have Too Much by Dr. Ralph Minear and William Proctor. And then what I think is the defining book that parents ought to read, Our Endangered Children by Vance Packard. You will remember that he wrote a book called A Nation of Strangers, where he talked about our roots being in midair. He also wrote the book, I think, The Hidden Persuaders. Our Endangered Children by Vance Packard. Our children are growing up in a vastly different world than we knew about and experienced. It's not only different, but it's dangerous. How dangerous? Tom Morgan, a friend of mine who is the district attorney for the Stone Mountain District, sent me some crime statistics involving juveniles in this state of ours and in this nation of ours. The number of teenagers murdered has doubled since 1985. In the state of Georgia in 1994, there were 326 juveniles charged as adults for violent crimes. A child dies every 2 hours as a result of gunfire in this country. And every 2 days, enough children are killed by guns in this country to fill a classroom. Between the years 1979 and 1992, 50,000 children in this country were killed by guns, more than the number of soldiers killed in the Vietnam War. Gunfire is now the leading cause of death for both black and white children, teenagers in this country. Earlier this spring, USA Today listed the 150 deadliest counties in the United States of America for children being killed by guns. 5 Georgia counties were in the top half, and Fulton County was in the top 5. Signs of the times. The annual cost of raising 2 children is an average of $20,052 per year, and the average annual income for a single mother is $16,759 per year. The new poor in our society are single mothers. Signs of the time. 2 of every 5 kids in America do not live with their fathers. The missing father is a better predictor of criminal activity than race or poverty. Young women who grow up in disrupted families are twice as likely to be a teenage mother. Today, only 51% of kids still live with both parents. Signs of the time. The Children's Defense Fund has pointed out that fewer than 3% of people default on payments for a used car, while 49% default on child support agreements. Signs of the time. We now have a slogan called Deadbeat Dads, and it's become a kind of slogan for irresponsibility. For 97% of the non-compliant, non-custodial parents are fathers. And in 1992, they owed $34 billion in back payments to their 23 million children. Signs of the time. 9 out of every 10 children on welfare are owed child support. Signs of the time. In the face of these rather grim realities, the evidence is that parenting in general is deteriorating in our day. Vance Packard has said that it is clear that our society is experiencing a serious malfunction in the role of preparing children for responsible adult living. We make all kinds of plans and promises about tomorrow, but the reality is that tomorrow will be dramatically impacted by how well we bring up today's children. Again, Packard challenges us, saying our basic social unit, the family, is under significant assault. I would have to say that in my own experience with people and with children after 34 years in the ministry, that parents today are facing significant challenges. As I have sought to formulate those challenges in my mind, there seem to be rather clearly about five. One, ours is a society, a world where there is no longer a consensus of shared values. What are the rules? What is acceptable? What is unacceptable? Everyone seems to determine their own rules today. Like the psalmist said, all we like sheep have gone astray, everyone to their own way. Ours, secondly, is a world where increasingly parents are working and the children are being reared by surrogate parents. Three, ours is a world where the family is literally under assault. A Yale professor was recently quoted as saying, we should take a tough look at the modern forms of damnation that confront our children. Ours is a world, fourthly, which is increasingly unfriendly to children. What a child needs within the framework of love is rather clear. There is a need to feel wanted and accepted, a need for continuity in relationships with biological parents, a need to have some sense that there is a regular, dependable quality to the world in which they live, a need for thoughtful guidance in coping with the demands of growing up. Ours is a world where many children are bored. We are becoming more and more urban, and in this setting, we do not have the chores and challenges of farm life like I had. Yeah, listen, friends, there's just a limited amount of devilment you can get into if you wake up before daylight, get ready, milk the cows, and go to school, then get home in the afternoon, feed the chickens, get all the animals in, fill up all the wood boxes. Then it's dark, and it's time for you to go in, have the evening meal, do your homework, and go to bed. You know, there are limited opportunities in all of that. Now, I'm not asking or advocating that everybody leave right now and go get a farm somewhere or another. But I'm just telling you, a lot of our kids are bored. And then they get part-time jobs, which enhances their sense of independence. And they're testing all of life's limits anyway. But boredom is the breeding ground for a lot of things, most of which are not good. Where necessities need to be addressed, where a child can feel a part of providing something meaningful to the family circle. All of that is hard to come by today. Hence the development of video game groupies, couch potatoes, and all of that. Signs of the times. Now, I don't have the time today to deal with the reality of rampaging crimes involving teenagers, the unwanted pregnancies in the teenage years, the drug challenges, the lawless behavior in the schools of America and Atlanta, sexual promiscuity, but suffice it to say that we have not yet found the cure for children whose nightmares are in fact reality. I guess the most graphic bit of truth I can give you is sharing with you a telephone call. The telephone call came to a center that specializes in helping teenage runaways. And a son had shown up there and said, I'm ready to go home. The center called the boy's father and told him the good news that his son had been found and was there and was eager to return to the family. And they were shocked with the father's response as he hung up. You've got him. You keep him. Now, we've looked for a bit at the ideal, and we have cringed a bit at the real. And parents today who want what is best for their children, and that's about 100% of parents, are in a state of near panic over what they need to do and what in God's name can in fact be done. So note with me thirdly and quickly the resources that are available. Basically, there are two resources that are available. The quality of home life and the quality of church life. A son of an executive in Detroit asked his father this question: what, Dad, is a hometown? It is a question that has to do with roots. Who am I? Where do I belong? Who do I belong to? It is a challenge to answer those questions in a highly mobile society. The reality is that home is where life is making up its mind about everything that matters. We know all of the qualities that strengthen home life. Dr. Nick Stinnett is an expert that I have confidence in. He's been involved in two major studies of what makes a strong family. And it's rather clear. It's family where members express a good deal of appreciation for each other and build one another up. They spend a lot of time together and genuinely enjoy their time together. They do a lot of direct face-to-face talking with one another. They are deeply committed to promoting each other's happiness and welfare. They tend to be committed to a spiritual lifestyle that seems to give them a sense of purpose and helps them to be more patient and forgiving with each other. They draw upon the trust that they have in each other to unite in coping with crises, and they come rather than be fragmented by them. We need to be working and praying and striving for all of that and more within the circle of home life. But you don't have to struggle alone. Your church is ready to walk with you. Where the church is a faith community and a community of love, where people are loved and cared for, where we acknowledge our need and our togetherness and join hands and hearts to journey together. This church is a place where children can feel safe. Come down here any Wednesday night and watch them running in the long hall out there and having a great time. Don't shake hands with any of them because they've got peanut butter and jelly on their hands. And I've got it over half of my suits and most of my cuts. But they're having a good time. They feel safe here. And families are strengthened and reinforced here. Where values are taught and praying, and I hope to God that the adult members of this church are modeling the right kind of values to our children. The most obvious moment where church and home combine is when we baptize a baby. And I hold that child up and I say, you are a child of God. What I'm also saying is, this is our child. We take promises together for this child. Some years ago, I held a child up. The little boy's big sister was just eagerly watching. She was just delighted at being a part of it all. And I held the child up and I said, you are a child of God. The little sister said, no, he's ours. I guess she thought I was about to give him away. But there is no more beautiful moment in the life of this church than when we baptize a baby. And you know, all the parents make certain promises. You remember them? To pray with and for the children. Have your children seen or heard you pray for them lately? Ever? You promise, we parents, to set before them a godly example. Our speech, our habits, our behavior, all of that should be a godly example. And you men, be sure it's clear to your children how much you love their mama. And listen, Dad, if you go to church once or twice a year, and listen, Mom, if you go to church once or twice a year, what is your child going to conclude? They are going to logically conclude that church and Sunday school is not very important. We also promise to teach our children the doctrines of our holy religion. You've got to know them before you teach them. Have you ever heard anything like this? I've exposed my daughter to a variety of religious beliefs so that she can make an intelligent decision when she gets older. Or how about this? I try not to impose my personal moral beliefs on my son. He's got to develop his own philosophy and live his own life. Or how about this? I don't care what my child believes as long as he's happy. Or how about this? I haven't been too dogmatic in teaching my children about moral values because they may reject mine and have none. Listen, friend, what in God's name can a preacher say about that? I tell you, it's a cop-out. That's what that is. It's an abdication of parental responsibility. That's what that is. What do you think would have happened to me if my father marched in every Sunday morning and said, "Son, what'll it be today? Shall we go shoot a few quail on the farm? I'll go down the Black River and swim a little while and maybe do a little fly fishing?" My father was an expert fly fisherman. He could put a fly in his hat. And if he'd done that, I'd probably be in the woods somewhere right now looking for quail. But he didn't do that. At my home, you got up and you went to church. It was never open for discussion. Ask yourselves some questions, parents of Peach Street. Does your child know the Ten Commandments? Can your child recite the 23rd Psalm? Does your child know the Lord's Prayer? Does your child know the Golden Rule? And can your child recite the Apostles' Creed? And if not, why not? Well, you know, we promise also when the child is baptized to strive by all the means of God's appointment to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. What does that mean? It means that the home will be a place where there is spiritual nurture, where God is honored and the Bible is read and the prayers are said. And the congregation, we make a promise too. Do you now, in the name of the Church of Jesus Christ, undertake the responsibility for the Christian nurture of this child, or these children? How well are we doing with our promise? And, you know, we sang so much and so well this morning, I can't say all I want to say. But let me just finish with this. We ought never to have to bring up the subject of Sunday school teachers in this church. The members of this church, adults, parents, grandmamas, granddaddies, ought to be standing in line, wringing their hands, hoping and praying that you will have an opportunity to teach a child in this church. I want you to meet one of our newest members right now. This is Sutton Trulock. He's 10 days old. 10 days old. Much of what he's going to be is going to be shaped by you and me as we help his mom and his dad. You know, 100 years from now, no one is going to be able to find, much less remember any sermons I preached. And it will not matter 100 years from now what kind of car I drove or the house I lived in. But listen, the world may in fact be different because I was important and you were important in the life of Sutton Trulock. Now you think about that. You just think about that. Would you stand for the benediction? And now go in peace. And as you go, remember that by the goodness of God, you were born. And remember that in the mercy of Jesus Christ, you've been redeemed. And remember that he walks with you every day to comfort, to strengthen, to guide. He promised he would. Lo, I am with you always. And remember that while others have called you servants, he has named you friends. In the strength of that mighty friendship, go forth now to serve in the Master's name. Till we meet again. Amen.